The hope that fans' absence would sneak Reading a win at Derby, one of the league's best home teams on Saturday, was squandered with a classic mad 5 minutes to help the Rams to a 2-1 win over Mark Bowen's side. Welcome to the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode 227 with your host, Mark Mayo. And joining me this week, Westy. Alan West, how is it going, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. I'm settling into this kind of routine of there's almost too much football on at the moment, isn't there? You kind of realise why you don't bother watching every game.
Well, there is that. I mean, I was looking forward to the football coming back, but like you say, it's a bit overkill now and I still can't get used to the crowd not being there. I'm still struggling with that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that's sort of thing that won't last too much longer, but obviously for the rest of the season, that'll be how it is. Let's jump in then to the recap. And before we do so, thank you as always to our Patreon campaigners and to ZCZ Films, our podcast sponsor. And yes, as we say, that 2-1 defeat at Derby is where we'll be heading to now in the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So Westy, Reading's performance at Derby, I suppose in a way, kind of like the performance in this first game against Stoke, wasn't actually too bad, really. We've come out after the first two games with a single point. And really, as I said in the intro, it was that after a first half, which was generally pretty positive and had a couple of chances that didn't go our way, that 5 minutes at the end, that was the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you just get the sense that is this a case of them keep shooting themselves in the foot at the back end of halves. You know, it's not a new thing. We've been seeing it pretty much throughout the season where they've gifted teams goals when, to be honest, I thought in general Reading were pretty good. I thought they were good value on the day. But you can't let centre-backs walk through your midfield and have easy passes into players that can finish like that. Like I said, I didn't think Derby were any better than us, but they just had a little bit more quality when it counted. And I think, like I said, we keep shooting ourselves in the foot. And I had this sort of high hopes, like everyone else, that when the season came back, it's like a mini season, that we will sort of eradicate these sort of problems. But we haven't. And something needs to be done, I think. I don't know what you think, Mark, but just lack a bit of steel, I think, Reading. Lack a bit of sort of winning mentality. I need to get that as soon as possible, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because you can sort of go into the individual performances and we're talking a bit about the goals, but it's just generally as a team, there seems to be almost a lack of what you might call a captain. I don't know if it's a bit of a cliche really to start saying about leaders on the pitch and vocal and all that sort of stuff that we talk about, but it does kind of feel like you do need someone just to rally people at key moments. And as Mark Bowen said in his press conference afterwards, that it's the end of the halves, isn't it? It's those moments when the players are a bit more drained and a bit more tired that everything starts going wrong.
Yeah, it is. And again, like I said, we've seen it throughout the season, not just in the last couple of games. But I was talking to a friend of mine today, and I just think when you look at Reading's side, and he agreed that there's probably squad-wise one of the best squads we've had for a long, long time. But you just need that sort of Graham Murty figures, you know, them sort of players that want to succeed and really want to win. And I think we're lacking that. I don't know whether it's because we've got a particularly young side at the moment and there's just no one is sort of prepared to sort of roll their sleeves up, for want of a better of a word. I just think you need someone in that midfield who's got a bit more steel so that the sort of players that can play are allowed to play. Your Ledgerwood type player, you know, the one who do the dirty work and get the ball and give it to players that can play football. I think they lack that. And I just think there's all round, even the defenders, you like to see a defence really get upset when they can see goals like the Arsenal of the 90s, you know, just hate conceding goals. But I don't see that in Reading's players. I just think they don't do their best. I just don't think they've got that winning mentality, that drive to really be a champion side, you know. And if you look back in the past at Reading teams, they've had that, not just from one individual, but from 5, 6, 7, and it becomes sort of infectious. Whereas Reading just seem a little young side who are quite happy to get beat and don't really get that upset about it.
Well, the two goals that went in, I suppose, are kind of emblematic of that. The first one, you know, I'm going to give Tom Lawrence credit. It was a good finish. You can always make claims about closing down and making blocks and everything like that. But when a player from a standing start 20 yards out picks out the top corner, sometimes you have to hold your hands up. The second one, however, it's really poor that the players, I suppose on both goals, the players are just allowed to run forward quite easily. And that's what we're talking about. Richards needs to get across the crosser more. Leamore dives in. The striker knows exactly what he has to do, just wait for the tackle to miss the ball and then fall over the player who's slid in. And that is that, really. That's the game sort of killed. And I suppose, in a way, in terms of how we're going to improve in the next few weeks in that sense, maybe Pelé coming back is going to be important. Renamata came back into the team for this game. But it's weird with Renamata because we see him as a bit more of a defensive type midfielder. But I'm wondering if that's maybe not the right idea with him, really, because he comes into teams and he's a more defensive midfielder than Swift or Jaria, but he isn't a natural ball winner, really, is he?
No, I think actually what's happened with Renamata is he's sort of become a victim of Jaria and Swift being more forward players. I think he's had to fill that role because that's the role that's available to him, whereas I think Renamata could easily be a more sort of box-to-box midfielder. Maybe he wouldn't get as many goals as Sidwell, but he certainly could do the same sort of job. But because of them two, he really can't. And with Elise in the side as well, I think you've got three midfielders there that, you know, are good on the ball. But when it comes to the dirty work, they're not that great at it. And also, another thing I've got to say about the midfield at the moment is, yeah, really good players, individually very good players, but they tend to keep the ball for far too long when they should just release and move. Jaria holds onto the ball too long. Swift does it, and so does Elise. They all do it. And I think they need to knock that out of their game pretty quick. It needs to be released and moved a lot quicker. And again, the other problem is, I think people point out all over social media this week, it's just centre forward. I think Puskas up front is an experiment that needs to stop because I haven't seen it work all season. He can't hold a ball. He's not great, quick in behind. And if you're playing one up front, he's not the answer. Is there an answer? I don't think there is. About Lucas Joao, obviously, in the side. But that's another thing that's going to need addressing at the next season if they think they're going to get anywhere near that top half of the Championship.
Well, you mentioned Puskas. We spoke a lot about him last week, and I'm keen not to sort of focus on him too much. But with some stats that I sort of dug out from this game, just as a sort of comparison to show good Puskas versus bad Puskas, basically. For example, in the Derby game, he had one shot, five passes and only 11 touches, winning one of his five aerial duels. And that's, you know, 11 touches for a centre-forward when you're the only centre-forward. He had one, you know, that one shot was a good chance as well that he missed.
Yeah, he should
score. Yeah, there's no defending those sort of stats. Compare that to, you know, you might think, oh, that's how it normally is. He just only takes his chances or whatever. When we beat Barnsley 2-0 at home earlier in the season, one of Puskas's better games, he had 35 touches, 17 passes and three shots. So he's much more involved in the game. And is it a case that it feels weird to say that we aren't getting the service into him, because we know that all the midfielders we have are good service midfielders, really. Like, they're good technical midfielders, at least. So is it a bit of everything, or is it the case that with a better centre-forward, there's more to play into, there's more of a game plan, whereas with the centre-forward we have, we don't really know how to get the best out of him?
No, we don't. I don't think the system will suit him. I mean, I know whatever people think, but for a £10 million striker, you expect more. But we've seen this year that that's not his game. He's not the player who can hold the ball. He's not great. He's not a physical presence up front. But what he can do is turn and score. We've seen him score very similar goals throughout games where he's got the ball, he's made a quick turn, and then he's finished. He's not, I wouldn't even say he's a poacher of a centre-forward. Again, I don't know what you think, Mark, but he doesn't seem to be like a Jamie Cureton type striker where he doesn't do an awful lot, but turns out where you need him. I think if you're playing one up front, he can't do it. We've seen it happen time and time again, but still we keep going back to the same old system that doesn't work. So either you change the formation to accommodate him where you let him sit on the last man and you get someone to play up front with him, which would probably work better for him. Because if you're asking to hold a ball and play others in, it's just not happening and he can't do it. So you can't teach an old dog new tricks to a certain extent. And I don't think that's his game. So why keep persevering with it? It's just not worked.
No, and that's the thing, isn't it? If you look at alternatives, you've got Sam Baldock, who again, he is a poacher sort of player, I think, but would you play him up front on his own? Probably not.
No, he's a buzzer, isn't he?
Yeah, so he's
more of a nuisance than Puskas. He will put himself about more and he will force defenders to make rash decisions. You know, he will get under their skin. So if you're going to play one up front, the choices, he probably would be a better choice than Puskas, but he's not the answer by any step of imagination. And the one that should be
going Mate.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The one that should be able to do that is Mate. But again, his first touch is so woeful that most of the time he looks a big clumsy oaf up front. And that's why he's been playing on the left wing, because it's less of a challenging position for him. And we know what he's got. He's got quality and he can be a bit of a bulldozer. So probably he would be the choice. But again, his first touch is grim sometimes.
Yeah, it's weird. We've got so many strikers that are good in pairs, and we've got so many central midfielders that can't be played in pairs, basically, that we've got a completely, you know, you've got two different systems inside one squad, and we can't, you know, not one of them works. And I suppose the other reason that we can't play a general sense of football, you can argue, is that we haven't got any wingers either. We've got Gareth McCleary, who came off the bench against Derby and looked good. I'd be tempted to start him against Brentford just because why not? And that's kind of it.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they've been sold out of the club, haven't they? At the beginning of the season, your Barrows and people like that went. It needs changing. And I think you're trying to put too many square pegs in round holes. And I think it's coming unstuck a little bit. Because the quality's there. Well, I think we all know the quality's there. But like I said, we're not scoring enough goals. And we're not holding the ball unless Lucas Joule plays. And you can't be relying on him forever. In fact, I did put on social media yesterday, would it have made a massive difference if we'd have kept Nelson Oliveira and not signed Puskas? Because I think, personally, it would have done. I think he's an all-round better striker, and he can do that job where he can hold the ball up front. And that releases the players like Ajara and Swift to get further up the pitch because they know that it's going to stick. At the moment, it doesn't stick.
No, well, just to round off the Derby sort, then we did get back a goal from 2-0 down. Renamota with a pretty opportunistic header, really nicely taken. They made it 2-1, and then, you know, there's a bit of pressure.
Poor goalkeeping, though, Mark. That was shocking goalkeeping.
It was. Ben Hamer, Reading Academy product, worth pointing out, just punched the ball and just kind of gave up on the looping header straight back in.
Well, he could have caught it. It was under no pressure. I don't know why he punched it. It was a ridiculous decision, but great for us. And like I said, I thought they played well second half, and I thought they were really good value. I mean, now I know there's 2-0 down there's chasing. Also, I wanted to point out as well, before you carried on there, Mark, is I thought Gunnar had a good game as well. I thought he was his normal steady Eddie self. And I think if they're letting him go at the end of the season, I know a lot of people don't seem to like him, but I think he'd be missed.
Yeah, no, I've been really happy with Gunnar back in team. Tim Deller made a point on BBC Barks that he's actually played his best season game per game for Reading this year, which I certainly wouldn't disagree with. Just in terms of overall stats, then, it's, you know, we played pretty well from then on, but it's kind of 2-0 football, I suppose, you can make an argument about. Only had one fewer shots than Derby. More of those shots were from inside the box, more corners, more crosses. And that was the result, I guess. The only other thing that I'd like to mention, Westy, is I don't know if you saw the footage of the fight or what handbags, you can call it, at the end of the game. What were your take on Matt Miazga and Tom Lawrence going, I suppose you can call it, toe-to-toe?
I probably shouldn't say this, but I quite enjoyed it. It was a good little scrap there, sort of a bit of push and shove, and a bit of slap round the face. But again, if Miazga's upset about losing the game, then I suppose me saying that there's no fight in the side sort of looks a bit stupid. But I think it was more of he'd been winding them up all game, and he said something to him, and they decided to have a little push and shove match. They both deserved to get sent off. They've got no one to blame but himself. And I wouldn't be surprised if Miazga didn't play for Reading again after that, because he's out for 3 games now, and season would be nearly done by the time he comes back, so they might well just cancel his loan and send it back to Chelsea.
Yeah, there'll only be 4 games left when he is eligible, and when you've got Gabe Osho, Tom McIntyre and Michael Morrison, you do kind of wonder what would be the point, unless we have a chance of bringing him back, or if the, you know, playoff or relegation picture somehow manages to change in that period.
It's a good time to have a look, isn't it, at the others, just give them a game, because let's face it, Miazga's probably not going to be here next year, so what's the point in playing out the season with him? You may as well play McIntyre and give him a nice little run in the side before the end of the season.
No, absolutely. I suppose my only take on the fight that we mentioned is that I went to uni with a guy who grew up in school at school with Tom Lawrence in Wrexham, and it's I can certainly imagine where he got his attitude from, let's put it that way. It's weird. I suppose from a Derby point of view, like, Philip Cocker is really annoyed with Tom Lawrence, because why has he got involved? Why does he have to fight the man that he's just beat? It seems very bizarre.
It was a strange one. Again, if it ends up costing them getting in the playoffs, I'm sure they're not going to be happy, because let's face it, he's one of their better players.
Yeah, absolutely. As well taken goal for the first one against Reading on Saturday. Let's move on then, talk about what you guys had to say in the mailbag, as well as Mark Bowen's comments after the game.
You know, the disappointing thing is, you know, and I suppose people say, I would say this, but I see teams in the playoff that are in the playoff positions are no better than us. In fact, I think we're a lot better than some of them in there. But over the course of the whole season, we've got to make sure that we make those key games and key points in games count better than they are at the moment. But, you know, the lads, again, since I've come into the job here that we're a good side and we're showing it. We haven't shown it in terms of results the last two games, but eyeing out those key situations in games, key times in games and those key decisions in games, then we'll turn those good performances into points.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Got a few, not as many questions, but quite, deeper questions this week with Johnny Hunt starting us off. How do we fix our defensive problems that have affected us for years? Basic mistakes and switching off during games. I suppose this is something we did talk about in the recap, but really it is, I suppose, for a wide point, Westy, it's just a million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is, but again, I think a lot of it stems from the fact that the midfield isn't strong enough sometimes on occasions, and Derby game being the point of reference, really. I think it's far too easy sometimes to get, if you're playing free in centre midfield, you should be able to deal with players running from centre back through your midfield, and they didn't deal with it. So once you expose your defence like that, they are going to drop the ball, want a better word, because let's face it, there's good players back there. They're not poor footballers. But if you're exposing them like that, they're going to concede goals. And you know yourself from watching Championship football, Championship teams tend to put a lot of players forward. We don't, but a lot of other teams put a lot of players forward in that box. And you've got to stop that from the very beginning. Stop the crosses, you stop the goals. Or stop people running through your midfield, you stop the goals. And they just haven't been doing that. And it's been far too easy to get out Reading all season, really.
I suppose it's worrying for the Brentford game because they are a team that plays football out from the back and everything. And we didn't let Derby do that with Andre Risdom in particular, the centre-back. We were very happy for him to run forward. And about 10 minutes into the game, he realised that. And he started running forward with the ball. And then we thought, oh, God, he's actually not too bad. And that's how the first goal came about. So I suppose part of it is game plan. But generally speaking, since Bowen has came in, compared to the, you know, the Jose Gomez year, we are better in defence than yeah. before. We only conceded one goal against Stoke in the last minute. I suppose we only conceded two goals at Derby. It's not terrible ratio to be in. So I suppose the defence generally, if it's, you know, you look at the table, 45 goals conceded this season. That's better than QPR, Sheffield Wednesday, Bristol City, Swansea, Blackburn, Derby. All loads of teams above us. Cardiff, Preston as well have conceded more goals. So maybe it is the question that if we just scored a few more, then it would look comparatively better. And Loyal Royal asks just that, where are our goals coming from? And again, this is what we've spoken about, the system and the players. There isn't one golden answer.
I said there was one thing you touched upon earlier about corners. We had a lot of corners against Derby, but where is our goal threat from a corner? I mean, in the past, we've had big, strong centre-backs like your Gorkses who would get on the end of them. But at the moment, you don't see anyone really attacking a header. Reading are not frightening from corners, are they? And I don't think they have been all season, unless my recollection's wrong.
Well, I suppose when Morrison's playing, he's been a threat. But Miazga isn't a threat. Moore isn't a threat. Puskas isn't a threat. And Mate is a bit of a threat. But I suppose that's kind of, you know, other than that, we haven't really got anyone who does pop up time and time again. Rinomoto obviously got the kind of opportunistic goal on the weekend. But
dropped to him, didn't it? There's no, he didn't attack it, did he? Just thought no. It fell to him. It was a good finish, don't get me wrong. But there's no threat there, and I think that nothing to scare anybody against Reading when it comes to a corner or a set piece, even for that extent. I thought some of the set pieces were poor on Saturday when they was in good positions.
Yeah, I suppose one, you've mentioned the midfielders as well. George Dupree asks, given how much credit has been given to Ajari all season, should we be disappointed that he's only got 3 goals and 4 assists? Do we get carried away with a pretty style of football, which doesn't seem to amount to a higher number of clear goal scoring chances? I think the Ajari question, I mean, I'm not going to criticise Ajari massively because I think he has been a really entertaining footballer to watch, and I don't think we should take that for granted. But the question is, do we get a bit overexcited? Because particularly earlier in the season, he was on really good form, and that has dropped off considerably. And he's become a bit of a problem player for Mark Bowen in a way, I suppose, Westy, because he feels like he has to play him because he has got, you know, incredible transitioning skills, but what is his best position? Is his best position deeper in the midfield where he can bring the ball out from defence? Is it higher up towards the attack? Is it on the wing? He doesn't quite know, Mark Bowen, where to play Ajari at the moment. And that's probably because, as George says, he's just not actually contributing goals or assists.
No, it's again, I think the words are show pony sometimes. You know, it does some nice things. It looks good, but it doesn't produce anything. Now, whether that's his fault or other players, leave that up to debate. But I think with Ajari, I think to a certain extent, you need to let him be further up the pitch. I think turning and running the players further up the pitch when he's got less to run at, I think would be a real threat to us. But again, he needs to convert that into scoring goals or being the assist man who's assisting 15 goals a season. You know, if he can do that, then great. I think he's capable. I think, again, he's not really had a lot of time playing first team football. And I think, again, we're expecting a lot because we know he's capable. I think if next year, I'm sure they're going to sign him. That's the word on the street. If they do, then it'd be his opportunity to really kick on next year. And I think he can be a real asset to us once they find what is his best position, because he's got all the attributes, hasn't he? He's strong, he's quick, he's good on the ball. So it'd be down to him then to sort of really prove himself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very happy with the patience, to have patience with him. We've got to remember his age, as you say, and that this isn't a straightforward thing just to come down from a team like Liverpool. And at the end of the day, you've got to remember that there is a reason that he costs only £3 million to sign him. There is a reason he's not playing for Liverpool. And we've got to make sure that we kind of pace ourselves with him, because if he was really, really good this season, we wouldn't have him anymore. So if he's really good next season and he is a permanent Reading player, then we'll make money out of him. And that's almost
that's the time he needs to do it, yeah.
Yeah, don't want to do it too soon. Speaking of which, again, Adam Jones with the final question of the mailbag saying, what do you make of the club's future? At the moment, we don't seem to have a clear vision or identity, but it seems like the last thing we need is another rebuild at a time where we desperately need stability. Can this be classed as a dark period for the club? To answer that last point, Westy, I'd say dark period for the club, no, because with the Championship, this club has spent decades in Division 3, Division 4, etc. So I think we're fine in that regard. What I would say in terms of this talk of a vision or identity, maybe there are some fans who feel like we don't have an identity because we're not a ball-playing side. We're not a like possession side like we have been under Sam and Gomez and people like that before. But that doesn't particularly bother me. I don't really want to support a team because it is known as X or Y. I support a team because, you know, various other reasons. But I feel like the sense of identity with the club, it's still, I'd still be comfortable saying that, you know, academy players, pretty local connection. It's just, you know, identity and vision and all these things are nice words, but when you've not got the results, I suppose it's not, I don't think we're not getting results because we lack an identity, and I don't think it would improve us particularly if we did have what you could say as a Reading identity.
Yeah, I just think it's not a dark season. In fact, if anything, it's been a decent season compared to some of the others recently. Certainly hope there, but again, the team will change pretty much completely, I'd have thought, next year. You're going to lose pretty much all them loan players are going to leave. And then the six players that are out of contract, you're expecting them all to leave. So they will promote from within, which they have done for the last 10 years or so, well, beyond that. It's just whether the players that they manage to get in next year, and I'm sure there'll be two or three, can really contribute to a side that is quite young and at times looks quite decent. So I know everyone's sort of doom and gloom because we've had a draw and a defeat, but I think long term, I think we're heading in the right direction. It's just that little bit of steel they need, and if they can get that, there's no reason. I mean, we've seen the Championship all year. I mean, Derby are right up there. Did they look a great side the other day? No. I've looked at some of the other teams in the playoffs. They're not great either. Preston's, teams like that around, in and around it, not been great all season. Had good patches, good spells, but they've not been brilliant. And I think they really don't need that much to be more competitive further up the league. They just need to cut out some of the errors and just get a bit of steel. And if they do that, then I think next year they can have a good season. So when it comes to identity, I think people look at it when you're losing, but when you start winning, no one questions it. So it's just a matter of winning games and everyone forgets about the other stuff that goes on behind the scenes, as we well know, Mark.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing, isn't it? You look at the table now, like Cardiff, sixth place. Yes, they're a better team than us at the moment, but when we play them one-on-one, do I think, oh God, we're going to get beat? No, I don't think that at all. And also to flip it on the other side, you look at, I mean, Huddersfield, Hull, Luton, Stoke in and around the relegation zone at the moment. Do I look at those teams and really worry they're about to catch us up? No, I don't really. I don't think we're going to be fighting relegation next season unless terrible things happen in the transfer market. So I think for the club's future, we've just got to keep biding our time, keep hoping that the financial decisions are being made correctly. We've got like the new training ground in now, and the academy is always looking decent. It's a young team. I think, you know, generally speaking, we're in a better position now than we were in 12 months ago. Let's say that for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Well, as ever, keep in your opinions and questions for the mailbag. Send those in to the Twitter and the Facebook of the Tireless End and the Tireless End at gmail.com. A lot of talk this week on social media about the contract decisions, so we'll be going on now into news buys and talking about those.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
So, Westy, we are keeping on until the end of the season. Tyler Blackett, Chris Gunner, Charlie Adam, Gareth McCleary, Gabe Osho, and Jordan Obita. And there was talk, actually, of Tyler Blackett signing a pre-contract agreement with a Turkish team. I think we can say that's not the case now. At the very least, as to whether, you know, I think we'll have another day, we'll have a conversation as to whether we'll keep on those guys for longer. But I suppose for now, there's no arguments whatsoever in keeping them on until the end of the season, is there?
Well, I thought it all depended on what's happening with the loan players, because for them players that, let's face it, are not really playing or only playing a little bit, and you'd have thought with if they are going to keep a beater, they'd have just got him to sign a new contract. So it looks clear to me that they're probably not. The others I'll just let go because I don't see what worth they really have here, unless you knew that the loan player is going to leave, which we're not sure about yet, I believe.
No, I think it's tomorrow as we sit here now, the deadline would be. But yeah, I suppose we will find out just before the Brentford game, we'll find out what happens with those. But yeah, I think they're worth, it's not going to be too expensive to keep those players around. None of them are massive earners. Maybe McCleary's on a good wage, but then he's got a unique role in the squad at the moment. So I think it's worth keeping on for the next few weeks. And as you say, maybe the lone players leaving will be a sign as to what role they'll be playing. Danny Loader is off. His time at Reading has come to an end, or will have tomorrow. And it's a shame, Westy, for a player who, you know, he is a local lad, went to school in Reading and came through the academy since he was 12 and had a really good shot at the first team as well. We read a blog online, I can't remember what that blog was called, but basically comparing the amount of minutes he got compared to the likes of, you know, Shane Long, Simon Cox and everything. And for an 18-year-old, he got more minutes than any of the other academy products that came up at that age. The jury is still out on whether he's going to be a good player, but ultimately, as Reading as a football club, that's it.
Yeah, I think I wrote on his Twitter that you just hope that when he goes, you hope that he sort of kicks on with his career, because you don't want him sort of getting stagnant and disappearing. I know there was some people on social media that wasn't particularly happy that he was leaving, but the way I look at it is he's had opportunity. He's still a very young man. He's not impressed me when he's played, but then he's not been unimpressive, if that makes any sense. He's not been great, but he's not been awful. I think there's a bright future for him as long as he's prepared to put in the work. Leaving Reading, he probably thinks at the moment, especially with Joe Hardley playing, that he's not got a look in. So what would be the point in sticking around here? Now, whether that would have changed if they knew he was going to stay, I don't know. But I don't think either manager showed a lot of faith in him, and he probably thinks he can do better elsewhere. So good luck to him. I've got no ill feeling towards him and just wish him well. And just as long as he trains hard and works hard, I'm sure he can get a decent career out of football.
No, I suppose it was just one of those situations where it felt inevitable, wasn't it? Reading almost sold him last summer. Now, in hindsight, and to be honest, at the time, sounds like it was the wrong decision not to sell him, particularly as he was so close to going to Wolves, had the medical and everything. I don't blame managers for not playing him because he didn't set the world alight, didn't really score any goals. I don't blame him for going because, you know, that is a... There were going to be good offers on the table for him, both obviously in terms of career and in terms of money. I don't blame the club for not giving him loads of money to stay. I don't really blame the club for not giving him a contract earlier, because I'm sure if they could have, they would have. So it's just one of those situations. It's the inevitability of football, and we're going to have to, you know, we'll get a tribunal fee. Won't be loads of money, but we'll get a percentage of his future moves and everything. And you know, good luck to him, as you said, but from a club point of view, we're just going to have to accept that's how it is when you're not a massive team, and that these players come through. And we've kept Elise, we got Konya Boyce-Clark up to a long deal. So, you know, you've got to take wins when you have them and accept defeats when you have them.
Yeah, and for him, I mean, again, it's a short career being a footballer, and if it's a big opportunity for him to sort of secure his future, then you can hardly blame him. I don't blame anyone for taking opportunities when they come, because sometimes you have to strike when the iron's hot, and at the moment, his stock is quite high, and that can change really quickly. So good luck to him. I hope he doesn't come back to haunt us, obviously, but other than that, just wish him well, really.
Yeah, in terms of coming back to haunt us, I suppose my last point is just that, as I've said, it can be brilliant in 10 years' time if he's leading the line for England. We'll hammer the club for not doing everything we could have. But if he goes on to do that, it will be probably because we let him go and he moved on. Yeah. So maybe he wouldn't have done that had he stayed at Reading. So we'll follow with interest, and hopefully it won't be a bad career that Danny Lowe has. We do want the best for him, because he is, you know, one of our own. We can't pick and choose, can we? If he's always seems like a good, young, passionate lad on social media and everything. Tried well for Reading, and sadly his time has come for the club. We have quite a few pieces on the website about his career. I wrote one saying that it was a fairy tale that was never to be. So head over to thetylersen.com for more coverage on that, and of course for the Brentford game, which we'll be talking about now in Big Match Preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Ars!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So Tuesday night, with the odd start time of 6 o'clock, so if anyone logs into their iFollow at 7:45 or 8 o'clock and sees the final score, that'll be because the game's over. 6 o'clock it is on Tuesday. Brentford at home. We are playing the form team in the division. They've won both their games back, 2-0 at Fulham and 1-0 against West Brom. They're now 5 points off second. And, well, Westy, we lost to Griffin Park earlier in the season, and this is not, in any sense of the word, likely to be an easy game.
No, it's a difficult game. And from a side that continually finish at the top end of the Championship, and not only that, they seem to be able to sell their best players and still continue to finish in decent positions every year. So well done to them. It's a tough game, but we know that on our day we're more than capable of beating anyone. So again, it's Championship football, anything could happen, but you would have thought on form alone it should be a Brentford win.
Yeah, you think as well with Reading's our record against the top four this season, 4 points from 7 games, just that one solitary win at Fulham, and yeah, Nottingham Forest kind of got a point against the West Brom, Leeds as well, just haven't really done very well against Brentford, as I say, lost their season. I suppose, in a way, with the way that the season has started, or the restart has been for Reading, we're 15th now, 7 points clear of the relegation, 11 points off playoffs. It's a low-pressure game for us. And the fact that we've not started particularly well means that maybe Bowen will be tempted to change the team a little bit more. No Miazga. Pele might be back just for a go. And yeah, I suppose for us, it's a bit of a free hit.
Yeah, it's a free hit. Again, we don't want to keep losing games, because we'll soon be looking over our shoulder if a few of them pick up points. So we do need to continue sort of get, even if it's the odd draw here and there, you need to get points on the board just to make sure we can get over that sort of 53, 54 mark that should keep us up. But yeah, it is low pressure. There's no one there for starters. That makes it easier for the beginning. But for Brentford, they're going to want to come and win, and they've been showing that sort of mentality, like I was talking about earlier in the show, that mentality to win games, whereas we sort of cower out nearer the end of halves. They'll be there to win it, and it'll be up to Reading to do something about that. Whether they will or not, we'll soon find out.
Absolutely, and as per usual, the game is available on iFollow, Match Pass Tenner, season ticket holders free. And I will point out as well, before or after this game, if we do lose it, and we, you know, 1 point out of 3 games might not look great, we do have a really solid run of form against relegation fighting teams, Luton, Huddersfield, Charlton, Middlesbrough afterwards. So, you know, it's one of those games to have a bit of perspective in afterwards if we do lose it. Westy, prediction league time, your optimism so far has you down near the bottom. Handbags on 14 points, yourself 15 after, I think you had a draw for Derby, didn't you?
I think so, yeah. No, so I was optimistic when I do. I really don't like backing against Reading, but sometimes you just use your head rather than your heart, I think.
Yeah, well, Ollie jumps up with a 2-1 defeat. So he's on 19 points with Johnny now. Wim on 20, Sim on 23. I plumped for the 2-1 Derby win, so I'm now top on 34. I've been top for a while, so it's not really now top, but still top. And I suppose.
Had a good season, Mark.
We're getting into the permutations territory now, aren't we, Estelle? when I can officially call it, and then I might start throwing in some silly ones. But I suppose for now it's the cold hard reality of the Brentford game. I'm going to go for a 2-0 defeat. I don't mean that as a thing that we're really bad. I just think that certain times these games on the restart, Westy, I've really noticed that almost the unpredictability has been taken away a lot with the lack of fans, and that it's pure hard quality wins out 9 times out of 10 now.
There's no referee decisions that can be pressured upon, is there? So you lose that from the home fans to a certain extent. So I agree with you. I think sort of pure form now is more fitting than hope. So I was going to go for 2-0 defeat, but I can't do that. So I'm going to go for don't know where I'm picking this from, a 1-1 draw.
Well, you know, if it comes down to pure quality, Reading do have a bit of quality still, and maybe Brentford are sort of punching above their weight a little bit. So there are grounds for optimism.
Well, I think this is the reason why I'm down the bottom of the prediction league, to be fair. This stupid knack of picking results ain't going to happen, but 1-1 is different.
Fair enough. Well, yeah, that's 6 o'clock on Tuesday, as I say. Follow the Silas on Twitter, social media, and the website for all the news and updates for that. Then 3 o'clock, we're at Luton on Saturday, July the 4th. So if you go to the zoo or whatever it is that's opening up on that day, then yeah, 3 o'clock for the radio for that one. Westy, it's been an interesting show to talk about defeat, but I think we've pretty much got a nail on it in terms of what Reading have got wrong, and there's a lot to fix, but hopefully not too difficult.
No, it's, again, I think the quality's there. It's just, well, not the whole quality, especially going forward, we need a bit more. But I think the basis is there for that side, and as long as they can keep them mainly together, get rid of some of the sort of dead wood, and see what happens with the loan players. I don't see no reason why they can't have a half-decent season next year. Just had a bit of steel. It's got to do. Put a bit of steel in the side.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for popping by this Monday afternoon, mate.
Always my pleasure. You know I love it.
And we will be back next week to talk about those games against Brentford and Luton as Reading continue their slightly dodgy start to the restart, with us down in 15th now and up against one of the form teams in the division. 6 o'clock on Tuesday at the Mad Stad. Tune in and keep up to date with everything going on the Tyler Send. Thank you very much for listening, and let's go and turn the season around with a nice little upset of a victory on Tuesday evening. Until next time, come on, you arse.